Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, my friends, welcome back to the third and final hour of the Political Cesspool radio program. It's Saturday evening, February 11th, and I'm coming to you live tonight from AM 1380 WLOM Radio in downtown Memphis, Tennessee. This radio program is going out to AM/FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network, and we're going around the world, simulcasting online to a legion of loyal listeners at thepoliticalcesspool.org, going on right now at cfcc.org, our partner organization, the Council of Conservative Citizens. You will find the Political Cesspool online chat and virtual fan party. People from all across the nation and indeed, again, around the globe, joining us right now in conversation at the Political Cesspool virtual fan party, and they're all excited about tonight's featured guest, and we only have him for three segments, roughly 45 minutes, so I don't want to waste a second of it. Dr. David Yeagley has been called an American Indian Leonardo da Vinci. He's an author, a scholar, a classical composer, concert musician, portrait artist, and political commentator. He founded and runs the popular blog BadEagle.com. An enrolled member of the Comanche tribe, Dr. Yeagley created BadEagle.com, the sole voice of conservative thought among American Indian intellectuals. He frequently discusses American Indian issues on radio and television and has appeared on The O'Reilly Factor, Hannity and Combs, and C-SPAN. Dr. Yeagley is also the great-great-grandson of Comanche leader Bad Eagle. He makes his encore appearance in the Political Cesspool tonight. Dr. Yeagley, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I consider it an honor.
The honor is all ours, let me assure you. I want to welcome also to the program right now Bill Rowland, my co-host, who was responsible for bringing you to the program tonight. And for that, I am thankful to him. Bill, welcome.
Well, it's good to be here, James.
With Dr. Yeagley and Bill Rowland on the line, we are certainly in for a treat. And Dr. Yeagley, of course, you being an American Indian who isn't anti-white, who is a conservative, they don't like you very much.
No, I have made a great number of enemies, and I think partly it's because of the curveballs that I seem to throw, unexpected positions that I've taken. But I believe that if my positions are examined carefully, they will be seen as completely logical and completely right.
Well, they are, and you write about a lot of issues, both through antiquity and all the way through current events. You wrote a very interesting article that I enjoyed digesting about the Super Bowl and the halftime show of the Super Bowl. It's all there, ladies and gentlemen, at BadEagle.com. Take a look, bookmark it, and make frequent visits to Dr. Yeagley's website. Bill, I want to bring you into the conversation. I know you have a lot to talk about with Dr. Yeagley, so I'm going to turn the show over to you right now.
Dr. Yeagley, again, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm going to jump right in because, we want to get as many of your opinions tonight as we can over the airwaves. But politically, the current Republican presidential bid, the competition between the candidates has, in my view, turned into a slapstick burlesque. I mean, one candidate after the other seeming to roll forward. But you supported Barbara Bachman early on. How do you see the Republican race shaping up right now? And do you think it's benefiting Obama more than it is gaining traction for the Republicans?
Well, I think that it's going to be a very, very tight race, even when we do come up with a final Republican candidate against Obama. I don't think it's going to be a landslide either way. I think it's going to be tooth and nail to the very end. And what I'm curious about is the basis on which the public, including the Republicans, the basis of their decisions on whom to select. We find that the media and the talk show hosts, even the conservative ones, are praising certain aspects of these four candidates now and talking about what they need to do to achieve the status of the ultimate conservative. And just one political platitude after another. And as far as I could see, Michelle Bachmann had all of those from the start. And it's like, how does she get written off so quickly? Well, she's very tiny, you know, small stature, and she's a woman, and she's not the best debater or orator in the world, although, but the basis for not choosing her, the basis for choosing who we're going to ultimately choose, I find worrisome because it doesn't seem to, the question is who can beat Obama and not, you know, who really is the best representative of American values.
Well, the way I see it is that Mitt Romney is, you know, has put on a conservative costume. Newt Gingrich, regardless of what his politics, and by the way, has never been done anything conservative. He's always talked conservative, but has never actually voted conservative or acted conservative. Is the vilest wretch in either party, as far as I'm concerned. And to me, Rick Santorum just seems sort of dumb in a way, not really a great intellect. I think they would all have a hard time with Obama, but you know, given this, you know, to me, the two most important nominations the president can make, well, from either party, are in the Supreme Court and the Attorney General, and certainly Obama has proven that the choice of Attorney General can be crucial. What do you want from the Republican presidential candidate once he is selected?
Well, I'd like to see a candidate that is willing to somehow see the Constitution as effective, efficient, pertinent, superior. I don't mean that in an idolatrous sort of sense, but somebody that's willing to really take it very seriously, revisit it, look into it carefully, and particularly consider states' rights. This America has never been the same since the Civil War, and I think that the unintended consequences was a ever increasing federal government, and I think that that weakens the confidence of the people in themselves, which is the worst possible thing that can happen, and it puts the emphasis on the federal government, and it does nothing but grow and grow out of hand, and the people are actually become weaker and weaker. And as I see it, the only solution to that the only political solution to that is a revival of states' rights.
Well, you just rung the big bell with most of our audience, so that was an excellent commentary there. But let's look at the worst case scenario. Obama's reelected. What do you think 4 more years of Obama are going to look like, given what we know about him now? And what if he should gain the House back, or the worst case scenario?
Well, I think it's possible, although probably not likely, but it's possible that we could have some kind of civil uprising, like we haven't seen in over a century. Just because I think enough people realize that we either do this now or.
It's the story of a lost city, lost opportunity, lost hope. A story of failed policies, failed leadership. A story of smooth-talking politicians, games of he said, she said, rhetoric, and division. One man has stood apart, stood strong and true. Voting against every tax increase, every unbalanced budget, every time. Standing up to the Washington machine, guided by principle. Ron Paul, the one who will stop the spending, save the dollar, create jobs, bring peace, the one who will restore liberty. Ron Paul, the one who can beat Obama and restore America now.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
I have to apologize to both our audience and our guest tonight. I was so enthralled with the conversation we were having, I missed my cue to go to break, and so we kind of got truncated there. But Dr. Yeagley, I believe the question posed to you in that last segment by my co-host Bill Rowland was, what can you expect or foresee if Obama is reelected? And you were in the middle of answering that when we went into break. Please continue.
Well, I think what will happen is that there will be a surge of states' rights across the nation, as that is our only defense against the federal government. Now, the Constitution provides for states' rights, and that is not a foreign, alien, anti-government position to take, states' rights. That is the pith of the American Constitution. And I think that if Obama is reelected, I would expect to see an uprising of a nature that we haven't seen in at least a century and a half, if you get my drift there. Right now, the problems that Texas and Arizona have had in defending their state borders, which also happen to be federal borders, shows the importance of states' rights, because if you depend upon the government, you are weakened. You are greatly weakened by any kind of dependence upon the federal government, and that's a clarion message coming out of the Arizona case. So I fear another 4 years of Obama, because it's only the direction he's going in is only going to intensify and get worse with every day that passes. If Americans elect him again, I don't know, is secession from the Union, is that a possibility anymore?
Hey, it's always a romantic idea for me, Dr. I can tell you that. Before I turn it back over to Bill, we have a lot of questions coming in for you from the Political Cesspool online chat room tonight, but we actually have a caller from that chat room on with you right now who is very interested to speak with you. Caller, you're on the line. Do we have the caller on the line? Okay, apparently he fell off. So, Bill, back over to you.
Well, Dr. Yeagley, I certainly would support states' rights for any cause against the federal government except a foreign war. But I think we're beginning to see some flashes of states' rights, particularly in conflicts or confrontations with the federal government over jurisdiction in certain legal cases. And I know that recently, I think it was 150 sheriffs from various states took an oath or got together and swore to uphold the Constitution, even in a face-off against the federal government. And that certainly indicates not only states' rights, but local rights concerning jurisdiction. Do you think that this is could be something, for instance, these showdowns with the federal government could become more frequent and actually lead to states saying, you know, back off of our people and get out of our business?
Well, I think that they're being forced to do that. The states are being forced to do that. I mean, we've got how many states? Most of them are southern states, but there's some northern ones involved, too, in this business of keeping Obama off of their presidential ballots, of the election ballots coming up in 2012. I'm sure you know about that. Georgia was the latest state in the news over that matter. That unless he can come down to their court, they subpoenaed him. Come down to our court and appear. As I think it was January 26th, not mistaken. He was to appear, and it was about his qualifications to be president. I mean, there's a lot of effort being made to prevent another 4 years of Obama, but I'm thinking that the advantage of a state and its sheriffs and its government taking charge, that's something that needs to be done regardless of who's reelected.
I would certainly agree.
Who is elected? I mean, I'm sorry. Whomever is elected, but Republican or Democrat, states need to develop a kind of independence.
Well, I would say that historically, keeping someone off the ballot would date back to 1860, when, of course, Abraham Lincoln wasn't on the ballot in any southern state, and certainly that prevented him from being elected by any electoral votes from the South. But Obama, as you said, has seemingly ignored all of these calls for proof of his citizenship, and of course that's a subject for an entire show talking about his citizenship.
Yeah.
But do you think that will have any resonance with voters, that could come back up as an issue? You know, is Obama a citizen of the United States or not? Or do you think that's passed under the bridge?
Well, no, I don't think it's passed under the bridge at all. I think it will come up again with an intensity as also all the other records that he's kept from us, you know, kept from the public. And I think that part of this is another thing, and I'm really classifying myself now. I think that states' rights is a solution, but behind that, there's even a deeper issue, and that is voting rights. Who should actually have the right to vote? What are the qualifications for a voter?
Let's
and I mean a whole lot more
because
than just
that
being
previous,
an American citizen.
In the
I mean,
hour,
it, I an informed mind. I mean, almost like a test of some kind ought to be taken to see if a person can think objectively to be qualified to even vote. Too many people can vote. Too many people who are uninformed, who are dangerous, but their vote counts.
Dr. Yeagley, I hate to interrupt, but I was addressing this issue in the previous hour, and I'm so glad that you brought it back to the audience's attention. We were watching a clip that was of a video, a candid video that was taken at a random American high school, and I'm sure what you would have seen in this video is very indicative of what you would see at any American high school, and that was people, seniors in high school, not knowing how many states there are, not knowing who the vice president is, not knowing even your most basic elementary level civics, not having knowledge of basic elementary civics. And I was talking about having some sort of a test. At least the bar should be set as low as knowing how many states there are in the United States before you should be able to vote. But there are so many people who vote who do not know even that, and they are electing our leaders, and that is scary, and I'm glad you brought this back up. What do you think the minimum bar should be for something like that?
Well, what you just said, Obama doesn't know how many states there are. You know, this guy is. I consider him. I've always considered him alien. You know, he's just an alien person. I don't recognize anything American in him or about him. But back to your qualifications. I think that the knowledge of the birth of America. I mean, you know, one test might not even suffice. I mean, if it there'd be a lot of people that couldn't pass it. If you just put down the basics of who, what, and how America came about and what it stands for, there's a whole lot of people I don't think would pass it.
Yeah, I mean,
so
you know,
I'll tell you what I did to it in the state of Oklahoma a few years ago. I contacted, it was when Frank Keating was the governor, and I was actually teaching at Oklahoma State University at the time here in Oklahoma City, and I suggested that we have a mandatory course in American patriotism. And he loved the idea, and he said, "Draw me up a curriculum, and I'll bring it before the legislature and so forth." And the woman, the senator that was head of the education,
Dr. Yagley, I hate to interrupt again, but we're coming up on a commercial break, so just hold that thought right there. We got a caller from Texas. We're going to get to him right after this break. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back with David Yagley.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
For too long now, those whose ancestors carved from a vast wilderness an awe-inspiring extension of Western civilization have been without any semblance of political representation. Abandoned by the political establishment, we now face the prospect of losing our national identity, culture, and our way of life. But there is hope. There is still time to right these wrongs, and there is a vehicle to organize our people into a force capable of reclaiming America's destiny. The American Third Position is that vehicle. It's a political party for our people, led by extraordinary patriots like Bill Johnson, Kevin McDonald, and myself, James Edwards. Our ancestors, from the gates of Vienna to the sands of Iwo Jima, sacrificed their all in order to secure Providence's most precious gift, freedom. Now it's our turn. Learn more at the American Third Position website, American3P.org. That's American, the number three, the letter P.org. This is the American Third Position, American3P.org.
To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
It's hard to believe and regrettable to understand that we only have one segment left with Dr. David Yeagley, our featured guest for tonight. I want to remind everyone to please do yourself a favor and check out his incredible website, badeagle.com. Badeagle.com for David Yeagley. I'm going to ask Dr. Yeagley to finish his thought on what we were talking about in the previous segment. Then we're going to get to a caller in Texas. Then we're going to let Bill Rowland wrap things up this segment. But Dr. Yeagley, we were talking about, you know, a minimum, some sort of a minimum test before people should be allowed to vote. The clip we played in the previous hour of high school students were asked, and keep in mind these are America's future voters, they were asked, you know, during which war did America win its independence? And the high school students answered the Korean War. I mean, this is what we have. This is what we're faced with today. Continue on with that, and then we'll get to our caller.
Well, a minimal test. I designed a curriculum for high school seniors, a course to take to prepare, mandatory before they graduated. That's what Governor Keating had asked me to do. He liked the idea. This was, several years ago. But the lady, her name was Penny Williams. She was a Democrat, Democrat senator who chaired the education department. She killed it. It was never brought before the legislature. She just killed it on her desk. It died on her desk. But the idea that I had was, and Governor Keating had basically, was to prepare students by taking a mandatory course in American patriotism before they graduate. There, that way, when they do turn 18, they will be qualified, or at least more qualified.
Or just a requirement to speak English would eliminate a lot of unqualified voters.
Yeah, then you wouldn't have Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney doing all their campaign ads in Spanish, apparently. Bill, before we get back to you, my friend, let's go quickly to a gentleman who's been waiting patiently in Dallas. He's an admirer of the Comanche tribe and a fan of David Yeagley, Gerald in Texas. How are you, Gerald?
Hey, James, I'm great. It's an honor to be on with Dr. Yeagley. How can you do y'all hear me okay?
We hear you loud and clear, Gerald.
Okay, great. I just wanted to say before I have asked my question that I downloaded Dr. Yeagley's talk that he gave to last year's AR conference. I thought it was outstanding, and I'm going to this year's conference, and I hope to meet him there. And I'm really excited about the whole thing. And I wanted to say one thing someone who's from Texas, that anybody who knows anything about Texas history knows that when the white settlers arrived there in the 1820s, it was not really the Mexicans who ruled what is now Texas. It was really the Comanches. And the
Comanches,
who had basically taken over, defeated the Spanish and then the Mexicans. And when the white settlers defeated the Mexicans in 1836, it took less than a year. But then they had to fight the Comanches for 50 years before they were finally defeated. And it was one of the epic struggles of American history. So I have a lot of interest and admiration for the Comanches. But I would like to ask Dr. Yeagley, we have a lot of historically minded listeners on the political cesspool, including me, and I would like your take on any book or any movies that you think might give a accurate view of the Comanches and just what they were all about.
Well, let me say this: your voice faded a little bit. So, but let me respond with this: I happen to be planning on campaigning for chairman of the Comanche Nation this spring. Our elections are in the end of April, early May, and part of what I'm emphasizing is the the sentiment among all Indians, not just Comanches, to value and cherish the past. Indians are romanticists, practically, when it comes to sentiment for the past. And I think that there's something intrinsically valuable in that disposition. I got to tell you, that this past month, I believe it was January 16th, yes, the Comanches had what they call a Comanche Constitution Day. They honored our Comanche Constitution. I mean, clearly, that's emulating a kind of conservative sentiment towards our Comanche Constitution, which was handed to us by the BIA. Yes, we revised it, but still, there's a certain magical regard for it. And I'm thinking this proves my point, which has been all along, that American Indians are fundamentally conservative. Just that they have not been politically identified, and all we've got is a few professional protesters and NGO personnel that happen to be Indian that the Democrats pay to, you know, criticize America, to condemn America and everything about it. They're paid to do this. That's their living. But that does not represent the nature of American Indian people. That's a misrepresentation, and I've tried everything I can to counter that, and that's part of the reason I'm running. I plan on running for chairman. I don't expect to win, but I expect to really put out a lot of strong ideas.
I'm sure you can, ladies and gentlemen, keep track of Dr. Yeagley's campaign there at badeagle.com. I want to echo the sentiments of Gerald. As a young boy, I was always fascinated, certainly with my own culture, my own history, European history, but certainly there was always something about American Indian history that fascinated me, and for that reason, among others, it's always great to have Dr. Yeagley as our guest. As Gerald also mentioned, Dr. Yeagley and I will both share the stage together at the 2012 American Renaissance Conference coming up in just a couple of weeks, March 16th, 17th, and 18th in Nashville, Tennessee. You can get more information about that at amren.com. Wanted to be sure to work in that plug before we run out of time tonight. Amren.com. You can meet David Yeagley in Nashville. And, Bill, speaking of time, we have but a few more fleeting minutes remaining, two or three minutes left. Last question for Dr. Yeagley goes back to you, my friend.
Well, staying on the topic of the American Indians, I'd like your opinion, Dr. Yeagley, or your insights into the decision by the Cherokees to expel the blacks who were claiming to be Cherokee. And as I understand, the courts upheld that vote that they took to remove the blacks from their tribe, who were there just by tradition, not by blood or tribal affiliation. What was your opinion on that?
Well, I felt that Indians who love to claim, we love to claim sovereignty, you know, we're sovereign nations, we earn that with blood one way or another, and that's very, very important. So Indians have the right to determine, to say, to declare who is a member of their nation and who isn't. Every Indian tribe has that. Now, I agreed with the rights of the nation, the Cherokee Nation, to make that decision. And there's 2,300 black people who had lived on Cherokee land and were just sort of taken care of. I don't think they really claimed to be Cherokee Indian. They claimed to be citizens of the Cherokee Nation, and the nation decided, well, actually, you're not citizens of the Cherokee Nation. I mean, citizenship can be revoked. The United States can revoke a person from being an American citizen if they so desire. I mean, that's a fundamental right of any human society that claims to be a nation. If you don't have that right to determine who your citizens are and who they are not, then what kind of a nation are you? You're not a nation. You're not even a club.
Well, the Cherokee certainly sent a strong message to the federal government about citizenship. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think a very valuable one in terms of sending a message to other people that we have to determine who we are at a level
below the federal government, just like Southerners, I think, certainly want to identify as Southerners and perhaps New Englanders and so forth, and that's been lost on us. You know, do you think, speaking as an Indian to, let's say, the white voter, the white conservative voter in the United States, what do you, from your perspective, say to, you know, to white people who carry this guilt and burden of thinking that everything should include equality and we should all be colorblind and so forth?
Well, let me say this. If you, let's say a descendant of Robert E. Lee came to the Comanche Nation and decided he wanted to be the leader of the Comanche Nation, would that even make sense? You know, if you're not an Indian, you can't be a leader of the Indian people. I mean, that's so basic. No, that would never be allowed. Now, if I, as a Comanche, went over to Nigeria and decided to run for president of Nigeria, what kind of sense would that make?
We're coming up on a break.
Exactly.
Let's pause it right there, gentlemen. We're going to wrap it up on the other side. Stay tuned, everybody.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
If you're at all like me, you have a tough time remembering appointments and events. But ladies and gentlemen, I have the answer. It's a premier service on the internet called Memo to Me. It's free. You ought to try it. Now I never miss the honey-do items from my wife or the important business meetings. They have strict privacy protection. That means they will release your email address to no one ever. You will not get spam because of Memo to Me. Unmatched dependability. Ladies and gentlemen, these folks have been around since 1998, and they are absolutely up online all the time to send you your reminders and appointments. They have rock-solid reliability. They have 5 redundant internet connections, diesel-powered generators backing up the system. I'm telling you, Memo to Me is the premier reminder service on the internet. It's free. You ought to give it a try. And, oh, by the way, if you're not available at your computer to get your email reminders, they can even send a reminder to your cell phone or pager. I use MemoToMe.com daily and highly recommend it to you. MemoToMe.com. Memo to Me.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. The last segment of the show has come upon us far too quickly. We already have our final guest on the line, although our featured guest, David Yeagley, still there, too. And before We bid him a great good night. I want to remind you to visit and bookmark his incredible website, badeagle.com. Don't forget that you can meet David Yeagley in Nashville, Tennessee, middle of March. He's going to be speaking at the American Renaissance Conference, as will I. For more information about that, go to amren.com. I want to thank also Bill Rowland for booking tonight's featured guest, David Yeagley, and for the contributions to the interview that he has given. And Dr. Yeagley, with that all being said, the last minute is to you to wrap up on the thoughts we had going into break and anything else you'd like to convey to the audience.
Well, let me just say this. If I claim Comanches have a right to be Comanche, to have a right to preserve being Comanche, to preserve our nation, and that would include not allowing non-Comanche people to come into the nation and take it over, I've got to give the same rights to every other ethnicity, every other nation, every other people. And I include the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant American people that who did basically create this country. They have a right to preserve what they feel is their country. I give them that. I support them in that right. And I think that ultimately that's the kind of equality that I try to render with my own personal life and ideas.
Ladies and gentlemen, read more about David Yeagley and about his great ancestor, Bad Eagle, at the website of the same name, badeagle.com. Dr. Yeagley, thanks for returning as our guest tonight. Look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks in Nashville. Bill Rowland, thank you for making it all possible and for steering the bulk of the interview. Godspeed to you both, gentlemen, and thanks again.
Thank you.
That being said, our final guest, our regular contributor, Peter Scoop Stanton, is on the line as we segue into the last few minutes of the show tonight. As everyone knows, the staff members of the Political Cesspool Radio program have always considered each other to be brothers. Our listening audience is part of the extended family that we share. We enjoy doing the show together. Bill Rowland, myself, Winston Smith, Scoop Stanton, Eddie the Bombardier, Miller, Keith Alexander. We all love working together, but we also have fun with each other outside of the studio. And Political Cesspool co-host Winston Smith once wrote about one of those memorable nights. He wrote an article entitled "An Evening Away from the Studio." It's featured prominently now at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, and it recounts in very vivid detail a night that the hosting staff, including Pete Stanton, shared in Memphis back a couple of years ago. We have that reposted for you at thepoliticalcesspool.org. I wish you all could have been there, but Scoop, you were there. Take the audience through that night and share any other thoughts you might want to before we run out of time.
Unattended vehicle.
Are you there, Scoop?
James?
Yeah, I hear you. Are you at a doctor's office?
Yes, I apologize in advance. It's where I'm at in the district. It's very, very, very windy. So could you go over the last 30 seconds? I've been walking around trying to get a good cellular phone signal.
Now, that's fine. All you got to do, I was just telling the people, you know, we shared a great night together outside of the studio a couple of years ago that Winston Smith wrote about in detail. Take the audience through that night and any other reflections you'd like to share.
Okay, let's start with last night. Last night I went on the Political Cesspool website, and that's my form of entertainment and or Twitter, and there is a reposting of a blog from 2007 talking about the bonds that we share on the political cesspool. And my name was mentioned many, many times about my trip to Memphis. And I was both honored and humbled. I just wish that a new blog entry about the wonderful people that you, me, Winston, Bill, Keith, and Eddie all get to meet. But back in 2007, I made a trip to Memphis to finally meet the political cesspool staff face-to-face. I was mostly communicating telephonically and through the Internet. Mind you, nobody from the show has ever met me since I was living overseas in Spain. So I show up to WLRM Studios, running late, of course, and I show up, the show's going live, James is running the board, and Eddie's the co-host. So I have to answer the call of nature. So I walk in, use the facilities, and I heard James say, "Eddie, somebody go to the bathroom? Are you carrying your weapon? All right, go find out that's Scoop Stanton or somebody else." thankfully, the bombardier asked to find out if it was indeed myself. So it was me, so I came out, and it was a great joy to everybody. And James went directly into the commercial. And then during the commercial, he says, all right, guys, if we go live, no cussing. And during the show, we had a couple laughs, and the bombardier said, James, you're like a son to me. And they looked over at me and said, Scoop, you too. Or he said, Pete, you too. The next night, we went out to dinner, and Winston and Jeff Melton and his wonderful family, along with Mrs. Bombardier, joined us. And during the dinner, the bombardier picked up my tab. Mind you, he only met me the day before. So then afterwards, after dinner, we went to a Ron Paul meeting rally where it was almost the entire Cesspool staff. Melton ran he was the moderator of the meeting at Range USA. And then Winston and I were sitting behind a woman with 12 shades of paint in her hair, and I commented to Winston that she looked like a Daily News truck out of New York. And then some jamoke said that, well, the Ron Paul campaign should cater to minorities and get more minorities involved. And James Edwards' head started to turn tomato red, and the bombardier started going off. That night, he earned the name the bombardier. And I'm sitting here saying, I am home. So the bombardier was ejected from Range USA, and the rest of us left shortly. We did go to a karaoke bar where it was like Blind Faith, Buffalo Springfield, Traffic, Cream, all rolled into one. As I forgot we sung Run Around Sue. And that was 2007. Fast forward to 2008, I go to the American Renaissance Conference. I showed up not as an attendee, but just to meet James and Danny Edwards. And we met many political Cesspool fans. And we also met former Cesspool guest Frank Borizelli. As you all know, he was trashed or cut and smeared by the New York Daily News for believing what we all believe. And subsequently, Mr. Borizelli got fired. And personally, I think Mr. Borizelli was a really stand-up guy. Fast forward to 2011 at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. James and I meet, and I pester James to introduce me to Jared Taylor, as if it wasn't for Jared Taylor, there would have been no Scoop Stanton. And then I met Mr. Taylor, and he was as pleasant and polite as can be, like I was an old friend, which was amazing. After the conference, James and I were looking at some photos of people and on the wall of prior speakers. I said, James, someday your face is going to be on that wall. And as we're looking, we saw pictures of Janet Napolitano and Nelson Mandela. And I said to James, never mind. So back in the elevator going down to the street level, the conversation between myself, James, and Jared Taylor was another gentleman whose hair looked absolutely perfect, like TV news perfect. The next day was the National Policy Institute conference where James and Jared and Sam Dixon, among other, were speakers. I show up, and I sit at one table. James is at another table, and Jared Taylor, who is also a speaker, mind you, is at a table behind me. Eventually, we all sat at one table of myself, Mr. Edwards, Jared Taylor, and Sam Dixon. I wrote on a piece of paper, I was in total awe. Jared and Sam were taking notes diligently from the other speakers. Myself and Mr. Edwards are writing just juvenile stuff. I had some personal issues that day, so even though James was a speaker, he wanted to make sure that everything at the Stanton household was A-OK, which is amazing. I was supposed to meet James later that night. However, another family emergency came up. But overall, I told James, I said, you know what, James, we are a family. And you, James, are my brother. James reciprocated the fact, and then that's why I decided to say, hello, good evening, James, good evening, Cesspool family. Because without you listeners, there wouldn't be no political Cesspool, there would be no James Edward, and there would be no Scoop Stanton. So that, I like to say thank you, listeners. Thank you, James, Winston, Eddie, Keith, Bill, and everybody else that I have forgotten. Back to you, James.
Hey, Scoop, impeccable timing on the length of your commentary, because you filled the entire segment with nary a second to spare, and you could have done it better, my friend. It's something we always want to impress upon the audience, those who have joined us in the online chat tonight, those who are listening around the world. We are a family, and Pete Scoop Stanton, our regular contributor at the conclusion of each show, has just given you an example over the course of his evolution with us as a part of our hosting staff, 07 until now, how we fit in with him. Read that story for yourself at thepoliticalcesspool.org. For Scoop Stanton, myself, and the rest of the staff, we will see you next week. Thanks for being a part of our family, everybody. Happy Valentine's Day. God bless you, and good night.